You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome in to DNVR's At The Rink podcast, hosted by Megan Angley and Jesse Montano.
Nailing it. Nailed it.
That's all we needed.
That's okay. It. Yeah, that's the end of the
this
pod.
This is the real first installment of the 5-on-5 Around The Rink style podcast, where we talk about a couple different topics around the league, but also specifically with the Avalanche. And we just give some observation and analysis of things that we've seen up close at the rink in talking with players and coach, and then just dive deeper into some other going-ons in the league as well.
Yeah, we've been talking about doing this pod, actually going all the way back to last season, because there's so much stuff that we, just talking to people around the rink, whether it be media from other cities, people that work with the teams, or just being in the locker room. Now that we are back in the locker room, talking to coach, there is so much stuff, there's so many quotes, videos, audio clips that we get that we just, because we have so much content coming out about all that stuff, some of it just kind of gets pushed by the wayside, but that doesn't mean that it's not really interesting stuff. So Megan, you and I, we're spending a lot of time at the rink right now, at practice, at morning skates, at games. And so we said, hey, we're hearing a lot of this stuff, whether it be about the Avs or otherwise, like you said, that let's make sure we're putting some of this out there. So that's what this is. So we will have the 5-on-5 written piece that we've done in the past will now be coming out on Sundays. It'll be called Sundays at the Rink. It'll be 5 observations from Megan, 5 from myself. It'll be accompanied by this podcast coming out on Mondays. That will be a diehard piece. So for subscribers, it will be a nice bonus piece of content that expands a little bit on what we talk about on this show, and maybe even some more things that we aren't able to get to on this show. So it's going to be a fun pod, and it's just more content. It's just more stuff that I'm excited. Cause again, there's a lot of times where you and I will walk away like, wow, that was a great conversation. I wasn't expecting him to say that. I don't really have anything to do with it, but now we have something to do with it.
Sometimes I get heavy handed with what I do transcribe and put out there, and it still doesn't even touch everything of what we hear. Yeah. And I just want to make the access even better for people to see what we're hearing in the room. Yeah. Cause we just want to be as transparent as possible. It's a privilege to be in that room in the first place.
Yep.
And get some of the great answers that we do. So any light that we can shed on some of these topics too is really helpful. And I think the very first topic is one that isn't necessarily shrouded in mystery, but has a lot of division in our understanding of what to make of it. And it's Martin Kaut.
Yep.
It's a player that has been on the brink trying to crack an NHL roster full-time for several seasons now. And the opportunity just hasn't really come up until this season, where I think this has been the closest to a real good chance that he's had.
Yep.
And then he's devastated by the news of being placed on waivers.
Yep.
And I think this was unexpected from his perspective. And so just looking at this team and its current construction, I think that's why people are confused by the decision for him to be placed on waivers, because they are not fully healthy, though there are reinforcements on the way. And there have been some positives in what we've seen in him in the Global Series to look into as well. And so we're just going to try to unpack some of this team's buy-in, the culture of this team, and try to understand why this might have happened in the first place. I know you've been talking to Bednar in the media room for a while now, so you have a pretty good pulse for that. But even just talking to some players who embody the work ethic that has brought this team to a Stanley Cup, it kind of shapes the conversation.
So it's really interesting, and we have a few audio clips that we'll get to here in a second. But I just want to talk about Martin Cowder as a whole. And honestly, we have several topics for the show, but one thing that we want this to be able to do is like talk about stuff till we're done talking about it. So we may not get to everything. And honestly, I have a feeling that Martin Cowder may dominate a lot of this conversation. Right. Again, not necessarily Martin Cowder the individual, but, and this maybe is going to sound a bit dramatic, but more kind of like what you're alluding to. What him as a player, I think, kind of represents and why he's having such a hard time cracking this lineup. And so all the audio that we have, Megan, you and I were kind of laughing right before because none of it is explicitly about Martin Cowder, but to me, it's about a lot of the things that this team is part of the fabric of this team's identity. And I think they are things that Martin Cowder fails to live up to at time. And it's why he's in the situation that he's in. Going back to Martin Cowder's first training camp with the Avs, he was coming off of, I don't even necessarily want to call it an injury, a heart condition
right.
that kept him out almost a full season, correct? Or maybe it was the full season, his draft year?
I think
year.
It was close, to, if not the full.
Yeah, close to. And, but he, you know, they all of his medicals checked out. He was good to go. It was something that they weren't concerned with inhibiting him later on. So, you know, everything seems to be all good. Well, he gets into camp and the conditioning testing just is a disaster for him. But everyone was willing to write it off. As he wasn't able to skate for a long time. He's just getting back into shape. Cut the kid a break. He'll go play a year of pro hockey, and then he'll be good to go. Well, fast forward now 5 years to the beginning of this season, and Martin Cowder was easily the most visibly tired at the end of the conditioning testing. Technically didn't finish his last leg on the down and backs. Left the ice surface early. And again, it was just one of those things where it was like, wow, that's just kind of a bad look. And when we talked to some of those young guys in the locker room, you know, you and I talked to Sampo, and there was a desperation in his voice. Like, I want to be here. I got a taste of it last year. And, you know, they've told me things I need to work on. And that's what I'm trying to get back to. And then we talked to Martin Cowder. And what was it? It was a lot of, I just want to be in the NHL. I just want to be there. And again, maybe this is me being overly dramatic, but like, I just didn't feel the same like passionate desire from him that I did in a guy like Ranta. You were there. Did you get that same vibe, or am I reading way too far into that?
It was a tough interview. He felt emotionally raw too. It felt like we had just caught him in a bit of a vulnerable moment, and he was willing to speak with us though. You know, there wasn't this pressure that he needed to talk to us as much as he did, but I don't know if he meant to convey desperation, but mm-hmm. that is how it felt. And I later talked with him after camp, after that, about what role specifically he would like to fill, because I do think he can fill a role more specifically than I just want to be in the NHL. I pushed him a little bit on that, and that's when he revealed that he's inspired by LOC. That is a player that he would hope to embody, and that is a terrific player for him to embody. When we get to some of the criticisms of Cowder through mm-hmm. this point, it's going to come back to effort, right? And so LOC is an energy type player that is somebody that he should hope to embody, but it's difficult because we look at the role that's available to Cowder, and it is looking like it'll probably, if there is another path back for him, going to be somewhere in the bottom six. Yep. And he has not succeeded with a shorter leash and a little bit limited ice time. And that is something that LOC has been able to overcome. So in challenging him a little bit after that initial interview in camp, he was able to give a little more detail as to what he wants to be, but he does need to be kind of specific in the role that he needs to play, because he's showing that to the organization too. And even someone like Ranta, you know, you bring up the differences, and every player is different, so I don't want to dive too deep into the side-by-side comparison, Ranta's attitude, even after being reassigned and reporting
and
to
Eagles
camp,
is he
knows his game. There was so much confidence in who he is, Sampo Ranta, that is, in his identity, and that he's not looking to waver from that in any way, and that he was not discouraged by being reassigned. And so the differences in the attitude will become important as we begin to unpack this a little bit more. But something I want to earmark too is the initial faith that the organization showed in Martin Cowder, knowing of his heart condition. They worked with him. And I think that is the start of a positive in this relationship that has really changed over the course of time.
Yeah.
But it's an important positive to note that this relationship between Martin Cowder and the organization began on a positive note that showed a lot of faith in him.
Yeah, and so you mentioned Logan O'Connor. So this is the first clip that I actually want to play, because I think it, you know, Martin Cowder told you, I want to be a guy like Logan O'Connor. Jared Bednar has told us, we look for our young guys to be guys like Logan O'Connor. And it's the biggest part of Kaut's game that I think is missing. So let's play that clip from O'Connor, and then we can kind of talk about where I think this doesn't apply to Martin Kaut.
Some of the younger guys coming in saying, look at the effort that he brings every night. When things are, you know, going a little well for you right now, things are going in, does that change your mindset? And how do you just kind of bring that effort every single day? How do you get yourself up to do that?
I think it's always sort of just been in my DNA to, you know, I'm not the most skilled player. That's pretty consistently, and I think that's, you know, gotten me to this point in my career, and I don't see myself stopping ever in my career because it's what's gotten me this far. And I think a big thing is if you don't have your A game, you sort of have to bring your B game. That's something that I've really tried to rely on in the pros, is you can't resort to your D game and be invisible out there. You got to make yourself visible however you can. Small details, you know, blocking shots, making hits, maybe just roughing it up with guys after the whistle or whatnot. If you don't have your A game, you have to bring something else besides that. So those are things I try to focus on, and using my speed is the biggest thing, and try and be hard on pucks, give D-men less time and space.
So he talks about there, when you don't have your A game, you have to find a way to bring your B game, and whether that be, you know, banging bodies in the corner, using your speed to hunt pucks, going to the front of the net. And that's how Logan O'Connor found a way in college and now in the NHL on a Stanley Cup winning team to stick undrafted. You know, this is a guy that found a way to carve out not just a respectable hockey career, but again, a key role on a Stanley Cup championship winner. So when I hear Martin Kaut talk about, well, that's the kind of guy I want to be, that's a lot of work. We joke, you know, all the time that what do you have to do to be Logan O'Connor to get up to play every game like that? And it's a lot of work. And you go back to that playoff run. Jared Bednar loved that line because they just outworked everybody. We've talked about it on some pods recently that fourth line from last year, the reason it was such a big success for the Avs was because, you know, they're not the most skilled, talented guys like Logan O'Connor says there. But they outwork everybody. And if Martin Kaut wants to fill that role, he has to figure out that part of his game. His number one knock has always been, it's too much fluctuation. It's way too up and down. You get a great night from him one night, and then he's a ghost for three in a row. Whether you think Logan O'Connor is a great player or not, the one thing you can never argue is his effort level on every single night. Even on nights, you know, early in this year, he had some bad games, no doubt. And he acknowledges that in that clip. You're not always going to have your best game. How do you find a way to be impactful? That's what guys like Logan O'Connor, Andrew Cogliano, you know, go back a couple of years, Matt Calvert, that's what those guys have found a way to do. And if Martin Kaut is saying, I want to be able to fill that kind of role, he's not even close. Like, he has a long way to go before he's that level of effort every single night.
And it comes back to a player-specific identity, which Logan O'Connor has found. And we're really talking about Martin Kaut, but this applies to other young prospects too. This has come up in the conversation surrounding Foodie. Cronin would say that LOC is a player he'd like Foodie to embody. They're obviously two very different players, but it just comes back to that work ethic that LOC has that a lot of young players should seek to emulate. And it's too why where Martin Kaut has begun to differentiate, and this really began last season, is as a PK specialist. Yep. He improved defensively and became a really important player on the Eagles penalty kill. But this is coming about kind of last season. And so this is still a relatively newer part of his game that he has really begun to improve upon. And I don't want to say that it's too little too late, but there's still more to fill beyond just that, because that LOC has that skill in the bag too. Like,
right,
you have to really begin to separate, because Kaut has a lot of skill upside, right? Offensively, you would hope that would translate to the NHL level a little more than we've seen so far.
Yep.
And I think it's one of those things where, don't just take it from me. Like, this isn't even really me saying this, but I pulled up something that Cronin talked about at the beginning of this season on Martin Kaut. He said he knows exactly what he needs to do. It's a mystery why some games he's skating. He's flying around, finishing checks, blocking shots, killing penalties, and scoring goals. In other games, it's not the same visibility. He talked about how they both have characteristics, Maltsev and Kaut, in terms of their compete level and pace. And with Maltsev, pace has been a word that has been used to talk about him and his game critically, that you hear it enough that there begins to be some concern then why this isn't being applied consistently with a player like Martin Kaut.
So I'm just realizing I have another Jared Bednar clip that I wish I would have sent over to Yahir. I'll post it with this pod when it comes out, where he talks about exactly what Cronin was saying there in direct reference to Martin Kaut. And he says he used O'Connor and Cogliano as examples. He said those are two guys that they found their level in the NHL, and he said they fluctuate about this much. Good games, bad games, but they're always right here. And he said Martin Kaut is still way too much of this. His good games are really solid. You say that's an NHL player. And then his bad games, like Greg Cronin's alluding to there, you're like, where is he? And you just can't have that. That's how razor thin the margin is. And then we do have one Jared Bednar clip that I want to play here. This was after the Boston Bruins game. They had just lost 4-1. Wasn't a fun night for the Avs. I thought a lot of the guys worked really hard, and that was kind of what I was asking Jared about was, hey, you know, how much does it say about the team they were able to keep working like that? I'm not saying this is tied directly to Martin Kaut, but I just found it odd, or I found it interesting, that we get this quote from Jared Bednar, we have this conversation with him, and then later that night or next morning, Martin Kaut is waived and reassigned to the Eagles.
Given the opponent and all the injuries, it would have been, you know, easy for to kind of just roll over a bit here. What can you say about just the fact that it seemed like everyone had their leg going tonight?
Yeah, we're not going to do that. If we're rolling over because it's too difficult or we're losing games and we need new players, we'll have to find other guys. We better be playing hard every single night, regardless of what we think the outcome will be, regardless if we're winning or losing. I mean, that's the culture we've built here. We're going to continue that regardless of. And if guys quit and don't play hard, then we'll find other players.
Do you expect that kind of leadership from your leaders, the ones that are here, to set that
example?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah. I mean, they've been doing it for how many years now? When it's healthy and when chips are down, and they've proven that they can be good leaders and good and guys that work hard and set the right example, and I expect it to continue, and I'm pretty sure it will.
So, again, that's not pointed at Martin Kaut necessarily. He never says, you know, anybody by name. And really, I'm the one who prompted him on guys quitting. But, again, it's just kind of interesting that he sends that message and the next day they find a new player to replace Martin Kaut. You have to wonder a bit, like, was that kind of a statement that, hey, there's no time for nights off? If you're taking the night off, see ya. You mentioned Jean-Luc Foudy a minute ago, Megan. Again, do I think he's been like the best player on the rink? Do I think he's been in, you know, whatever? No. But I think that kid skated his ass off now for four games in a row and has put himself in great situations to score, which what you were kind of alluding to a minute ago, one thing Jerry Bednar loves to say, put in the work first, and you'll put yourself in position for your skill to take over. I think Martin Kaut comes up short on putting in the work first.
And this is probably premature, but someone like Ben Myers is a good comparison in this situation because he has had huge defensive errors that have cost the team in his second showing, now back up with the Avs, right? There are definitely some shortcomings that are kind of glaring at the moment, but the effort is there.
Yeah.
And it's there shift by shift. That is something that I would say was true of him at the American League level too. You'd like to see a little bit more offense there, but other than that, I think that's why a player like Ben Myers is, I don't want to use the word rewarded, but is seeing more time and is staying up for right now. And I think what's difficult is it's not just Cronin saying something and Bednar saying something, even in our own observations. I remember last season when Kaut, I think he played up six games with the Avs, he got hurt, which is unfortunate. It disrupted his stint last year, but then he never gets called back up. And I noticed in some of his first games back to the American League, once he got healthy back with the Eagles, there were some effort-based lapses at the ends of shifts that could have been avoided if he had just applied 100% effort instead of 85.
Yep.
And they led to some costly mistakes the other way. And I thought that in the position that he's in, because Rudo, when we were talking about this kind of as a group, he talked about at the American League level, not everybody's giving 100% every night.
Right.
And that's probably true. But if I've just been reassigned from my NHL team, I want to make such a statement at the American League level when I return that they have no choice but to call me back up.
Right.
And it's very revealing that last season he doesn't get another call up. And we've already seen a change in how this has been executed this season with a change of leadership in the front office. Like, last year was the year of Sakura, Megna, Sherwood. And there was still some of that this year. We've seen a lot more opportunity, a lot more injury. So things are different in that regard.
Yep.
But it's still a little troubling that he didn't get another call up again last year. And I think these effort-based mistakes are some of why we can point to that. You pointed out, I think, in the Boston game, was it? The icing.
I was trying to find the tweet, yeah.
That's what reminded me of it. Those are the types of mistake that are effort. They're not mental lapses.
Yep. And the tweet that Megan's referring to that I pointed out, Martin Kaut iced a puck, 2 feet shy of the red line. And I've seen that same mistake for Martin Kaut over and over and over again over the last couple seasons. And to your point, in a vacuum, he took a, he pulled up a stride short. Eh. But for a player in Martin Kaut's position, where by his own acknowledgement, it's do or die. Every shift is do or die for him for his NHL career. And oh, by the way, the one part in all of this we haven't mentioned, Martin Kaut has now cleared waivers twice this year. So for a lot of the people that think, oh, the Avs are just, the Avs don't use him right, the Avs don't whatever, right now, 32 teams all agree this is an AHL player. And that, to me, I think, has to be the part that is so difficult for Martin Kaut to swallow, but that leads right to your point, Megan, of what does it take then to get this dude motivated? And again, like, we don't know Martin Kaut. Maybe he is giving 150% and he's just, it's just not there for him. But the fact that effort continues to be the criticism against him for 5 years. Look, if you're talking a year or two, you say young player, maybe the organization doesn't seem right. Talking 5 years and the criticism against him day one is the same criticism against him today. The effort isn't anywhere near consistent enough, and it manifests itself to what you're saying, effort-based mistakes at the ends of shifts that are easy for coaches to point at.
And I think that's where we agree that there's NHL caliber talent in Kaut. And that is the upside that makes it hard for other people on the outside looking in to justify his reassignment.
Right.
Because that was, in the games following that, we see players like Cal Burke, who I thought was fine, but he's very much green and raw and making an NHL debut, whereas you have a little bit more of a trusted, you have a bigger body of work to evaluate Martin Kaut on at that point, that it's quite a revealing decision. And so pulling the focus away from Kaut for just a second too, because you talked about OC and Cagliano as two people that have sort of been pointed to as the culture for work ethic in this locker room. And we look at the beginning of the year, a lot of team meetings to set what the buy-in was for this team, because back in October, there were definitely some hiccups, some struggles. Like, this was still a team without Landeskog. They had not been hit with the number of injuries that they were hit with, but they were struggling. And they were having these closed-door meetings and establishing the buy-in. And a lot of players were already familiar with it because they went on a long Stanley Cup playoff run last year.
Yep.
And now there's lots of new faces in the room. That's not just limited to Martin Kaut, but there are other new players in that room. So I talked to Andrew Cogliano, because with the leadership group getting injured to the degree, right, he is one that is now wearing the A. And he talked about, when he was a new face in the league, if he could go back and give himself any piece of advice, especially in the face of adversity, this is what it would be, and it all related to work ethic.
You know what, I think work is the best thing you could do. I think work is the biggest thing you could bring to the table every night, and energy. I think as a young guy, they should have energy. They're young guys for a reason. They're in the league. This is fresh for them, so... energy and work and work ethic and competing should not have an excuse. So I think if I could tell myself when I was young, I think older guys respect guys that work hard. So it'd be bringing work every night, bringing a work ethic, dedication in the game, and really you live with the results if guys are doing that.
He talked about how if guys are doing this, if young players are doing this, you can live with the mistakes that get made.
Yeah.
And I think that's just true from Bednar's perspective and what he's willing to tolerate, what he wants to reward in players, because I don't even want to overanalyze Alex Galchenyuk, but we look at the penalties that he took just before getting reassigned, and it almost feels like this would support that belief that there are some mistakes that, from a coach's perspective, are harder to forgive.
Let's go back a step further to Mikhail Maltsev last year.
That was pretty immediate, the Tampa Bay game, right?
Right, yeah. And this is another guy who has effort-based question marks, makes a really bad mistake, couple of mistakes in that game. He's gone, doesn't get another call-up, and I think that's, you know, hearing Andrew Cogliano talk about it and your, you know, just kind of your larger conversation with him, I think that's a totally fair kind of parallel to draw of, again, using Jean-Luc Foudy as the example. He has had far from four perfect games now, right, in a row, but he's worked hard. He's made himself visible. So you're willing to live with the mistakes. So you're like, yeah, he's working really hard to do the right thing. And again, now what I'm about to say here, going back to Martin Kaut, this is purely speculation on my part, and I don't even want to get too carried away with it. But in the spirit of what Andrew Cogliano was just saying, you know, some of the veteran guys will respect you more when you're putting in that work. And you can defer on this question, but does it not seem to you, not that people don't like Martin Kaut, not that he's not welcomed in that room, but he just seems, in the limited observations that we get, he does seem to be a little bit more distant from some of the other people. I don't know if that's language related or what. We have heard in the past of there potentially being some friction between him and some of the decision makers. I mean, I get it. He's not happy. He hasn't made the NHL roster full time yet. How much do you think that does it, or do you think any of that plays into it? Do you think any of these veteran players, let's say, like, we're all here, we're bought in to 150% every day, and here's this kid coming in, pissed that he's not on the team, but we don't feel like he's giving the same effort we do.
It's hard because looking at when he first entered the league, he was such a young player. He encountered cultural obstacles integrating with the American League team, yep, at that time. And thankfully, Pavel Francouz was there with him for some of that to help the transition to become a lot easier. But I think socially, this was absolutely a challenge for him. And it's a language barrier. It's cultural differences, like, not even necessarily pointing to anything personal about him as a player.
For sure.
And that's challenging. And I want to be sympathetic of that, because I think now that he's had a few years in that room in Loveland, I do think he's begun to lay, you know, building blocks and develop friendships, relationships up there, that he hasn't had the length of time to begin establishing here, because I do think it is harder for him. Like, I look at someone like Ben Myers, who I think has fell into friendship with some of the other guys who played college hockey. That was an easy introduction for them to make and immediately relate to one another about. And so there's guys, I think, in the Avs room that Ben Myers, like, he played with Sampo in college.
Right, right.
It was easy for him to integrate. By comparison, I do think Martin Kaut has maybe struggled in some ways. And it might be just the absence of information, too. Like, he might be quieter, right, and not building rapport with some of the older guys in that room. Not, you know, for any nefarious reasons.
Right, right.
It's more challenging. And so if all they know is what they see on ice, they can begin to draw conclusions that could be just creating more obstacles for him. Because we were talking about this before the show. He gets reassigned to Loveland. He scores a goal in his first game back, which is great. I'm not going to lie. This weekend series was not good for the Eagles. Dropping two games at home against a struggling Henderson team who has had pretty fine goaltending. Like, it's just a team that has struggled on the whole as a season. Dropping two games at home felt really bad for the Eagles. I'm not pinning that on Martin Kaut, but I do think it's interesting that he wore a letter in his return.
Me too.
And this is a team that now doesn't have a captain, right? They've got Ryan Wagner wearing a letter. Brad Hunt was previously. Now that he's up with the Avs, that sort of opened the door for Kaut to wear a letter in these games. And I think that's at least a message from the Eagles side of things of his value there. But it's just hard to say if he's begun to establish that value in the Avs locker room presently.
No, for sure. And again, like, we're talking about based off of what we've seen, conversations we've had, there's so much that kind of is unknown on that aspect of it. But, you know, you feel for Martin Kaut, the individual. That's got to be tough. But at the same time, you know, I actually thought, and this is kind of, I guess, my kind of final thought here on Kaut. I know we can move on here.
Right.
But I thought Rudo's, when we were talking about it on the watch long before this, His defense of that in the AHL, I thought, really kind of proved the point when he said, yeah, but a lot of players in the AHL kind of take the night off. And it's like, right. And that's why they're in the American League and not the National League. It's not that they're bad hockey players, not that they're not skilled, but, and again, ask Logan O'Connor. He understands this. This is someone who understands this. My effort keeps me here. My legs keep me here. There are more skilled players than Logan O'Connor in the AHL, but they don't have the work ethic that he does. And the one part, this is my last thought on Kaut. I know I just said that. The one part that you have to worry about if you're Martin Kaut, it may not just be that you're not fit for this Avalanche team. The league is trying to emulate the way this Avalanche team plays. Fast and smart, making good plays, but you're doing it with pace. If he cannot play with pace, there may not be a spot for him in the NHL.
It's really hard. Like, I don't know what the path forward looks like. It was questions that I wanted to ask him and Cronin, because we know Bednar talked to us and he said he has his messaging. Yep. And he gave a little bit of a glimpse as to what that messaging is. And I think this is what we're piecing together. We believe that messaging to be. But I would like to hear, in Martin Kaut's words, what the path forward looks like. And honestly, just where his mindset is at. I hope he has a really good support system behind him and in his corner right now. This is not the conventional path to the NHL that I think back when we talked about good faith, organization, this relationship began so positive. A lot has changed. And I would be very curious to know how he feels he needs to move forward from here too. Just a lot of obstacles ahead of him. And I, for what it's worth, was not able to talk to Cronin or Kaut this weekend. So hopefully in this upcoming week, that's something I can get more information on. But it does, he has a lot of challenges ahead of him.
For sure. Yep.
Let's see. What did we have next on the docket?
I was going to say, I think Kale, yeah?
Kale, yes. Shesterkin.
So we don't have to spend a ton of time on this one. This was just one that, so I've actually got his full availability queued because he talked about some more interesting stuff outside of just the Igor Shesterkin thing, but I posted the portion of the interview you're about to hear where he talks about the glove saves that Igor Shesterkin made on him in overtime a few nights ago. Big windmill there, definitely a little bit of extra fluff on it from Shesterkin. And I posted it, and Rangers fans did not care for it at all, so my mentions are actively still just going nuts. And it was just kind of funny because Cale Makar is very quiet. He can be to himself, but he is a fierce competitor. And it was just funny because you could tell that he did not care for that Shesterkin did that. So that's kind of what this is about as a whole. But in the clip, he also does talk about the boost that it was for the team getting Nichushkin back. And then a little bit of overtime and the change of philosophy there for the Avs. So we'll play that and we can talk a little bit about the Shesterkin thing because thought it was fun to see some fire from Kale.
How much of a boost is it emotionally and kind of mentally to get Val back in a game like that?
Yeah, it's huge. He fills a really key role for us. So being able to put him up there and then bump a couple guys down in terms of just chemistry-wise, it really helped. So he was a huge huge addition tonight. And when you saw it, I feel like we felt like a more complete team. So yeah, everybody was working as a collective whole tonight. And it's unfortunate, but I mean, end of the day, we got to convert on the power play, and that's it.
It seems like there's been a philosophy change in overtime, a lot more possession from you guys. Has that been anything that's been talked about that's been changed, or is it just trying something new?
Yeah, I mean, overtime, it's all about kind of reading the situation. If you don't have anything, you might as well just bring it, take it out, and kind of waste their legs a little bit. So you have the puck, and then when something's they're going to be more tired than you. So when something opens up, you just have to take that opportunity. So, I mean, for me, I just walked over the slot and made a good shot. And I mean, their goalie's all about the show, so went straight in his glove. It just nice little windmill there, so just kind of looked away.
I know you guys got Nichushkin back, but you also had a lot more chances today compared to, you know, 2 nights ago. What else was different tonight?
Yeah, just in terms of kind of the game wise, like I said, I just think that the completeness overall, you have that line with Mikko and Val who are hard workers in the corner, can retrieve pucks. So I felt like we were getting a lot more opportunities up top at the end. When that happens, I feel like that opens up things for our team. And It's not just that, but those guys being able to drive their feet out of those corners and create, get that middle ice, sucks all their guys low, and then allows us to be open up top. So it opens so many things when guys are working together. And I mean, it wasn't just their line tonight, it was every single line. I think that was why it felt like a better game.
A little spicy from Kale. They say he's a competitor. Have you seen all the mentions?
Yeah, it just...
All my mentions, I guess?
It feels misinterpreted because we know Kale's character, and that even this, as spicy to me, reads matter of fact. It
right.
really doesn't even seem like that much negative value, if any, is being assigned to a flashy save. Like, this is a lot of goaltenders in general, the theatrics of the windmill save. Like,
right.
this is something Shesterkin has done before, and we've seen Patrick Waugh do it. Like, there's no negative value assigned to that specifically. It's frustrating when you're the player and you get denied in
right.
overtime, but it doesn't have that much negative connotation attached to it to be upset that a player points it out.
Right. That was my thing. I thought that some of the people that were upset about it, about the fact that he said it, it's like, it really wasn't that big of a deal. Like, Igor Shesterkin did that. Like, that is a thing
it's
that
just
happened.
Observational.
Like, yeah. And like, if you're like, oh, Kale McCarr's sour, it's like, yeah, he just lost. Yeah, like, yes, he is. Like, he's pissed. And it, you know, to your point, like, goalies like to be flashy. They don't get to celebrate the same way that players do for, like, goals. So they'll throw some stank on there. But, yeah, I just thought it was that comment really seemed to upset a lot of Ranger fans.
Right. Like, bummed for McCarr, but no issue with Shesterkin making a save.
Right.
That's what he's supposed to do. That's his job. And I think... You'll have to tell me how you feel about this, but a lot of people feel that Kale McCarr faked the reaction to the high stick that that wasn't called on Lafreniere.
Yeah.
And I really have watched it only from one angle and cannot find an alternative angle, and I genuinely just cannot tell because
so
whatever happens, there's like shoulders
it's
here.
It's the corner angle right there, right?
Right, in the boards.
So what I think happened, because it happened right down in front of the press box, I don't even necessarily know if it was his stick. It could have been a butt end or an elbow. But I can tell you, based on the way that Kale reacted, and then when he got to the bench, continued to, you know, talk to
right.
the trainer and stuff, he was not just trying to sell it to get a call. Was he maybe petitioning to the ref after it happened? How did you not call that or whatever? Sure. But something hit him. All of the people that were assuming he was trying to sell a high stick, it didn't have to, like, you can get hit in the face with an elbow pad, and that really hurts.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whoever's glove that was, your butt end could have come out and caught Kale on the backside. Like, it wasn't necessarily he was trying to sell a high stick, but something hit him in the face.
I think something genuinely hit him in the face. I don't really know what, you know, if this was malicious, if this was
yeah.
just incidental contact, but he looked like he really got hit in the face.
Yeah.
And so I think people pointing to that as this parallel juxtaposition, like, well, he's the theatrical one. I was like,
right.
no, I think he really got hit.
Well,
but it did remind me of the Taves actual, I think it was high stick on McCarr, and they accused Lafreniere of doing it, but it was actually Taves in
the
previous Rangers game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, you know, it's just like checks and balances at this point. A lot of people don't think it even happened in this game, but I do think he genuinely got hit in the face, and I don't think it was anything dirty, but
yeah.
it's just a weird critique.
Well, and then again, the Shesterkin thing to me that I thought was funny was like, again, however you feel about it, like, he did what McCarr said is accurate. Like, it's factually accurate. He did that. Last thing on McCarr, I just wanted your thoughts, because it's something you and I have talked about quite a bit. You asked Jared Bednar about it a couple weeks ago. Talked about the change of philosophy there in overtime. And I guess neither him nor Bednar have actually embraced it as a change in philosophy, but more of just talking about how they're viewing it as a possession game. And I don't know, for me, it's not quite as fun to watch. But given their personnel, they seem to be a much more effective 3-on-3 team now.
Yeah, because what was more fun to watch was also what we saw defeat in a few seconds into overtime, because it backfired too.
Yep.
I think it was too high risk with high reward, sure.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like calculated risk that comes about in a slower, more patient way. They're just looking to be more dangerous deception,
mm-hmm.
and it's cautious. And as a result, it does unfold more slowly. There's a lot of resetting that's happening in this version of overtime that it might not be as entertaining to watch, but I think the probability of success is so much higher. And these players are so smart, and it's such a testament of how intelligent they are, too, that it really captures that in a nice way. That I like to see it executed this way. it may not be as entertaining, but I appreciate the caution.
Right, and, you know, we are recording this an hour after they just beat the St. Louis yes. Blues in overtime. But I thought that was a good game against the Rangers. Excuse me, a good overtime period against the Rangers. They end up dropping it in the shootout. It happens. You know, you get to a 50-50 coin flip. But they really controlled the puck for the majority of that overtime. The overtime that you asked Jared Bednar about, you know, after the fact, I believe they won that game as well.
Yep,
and they
win
tonight. They've had some success. And like you said, yeah, that real high event, real fun stuff to watch from the past did not always yield the results you wanted. So just interesting to hear both him and Bednar now over the last couple weeks acknowledge it's not necessarily that we're changing anything. You know, Bednar even made the joke. We've been asking this of them for years. But it almost just seems like that switch, or, you know, it's kind of clicked for them. Like, oh, yeah, it's not quite as fun and it's not as flashy, but it's way more successful to do it this way. And just interesting.
It's just the lifeblood of this team. It's always about hard work.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, really, I think you just summed it up. Like, hard work will be the title of this episode now, because that's really what it is. That's what, unfortunately, you know, you and I were talking about Martin Kaut. It's a bleak outlook for him, because really the only answer is work harder. And that's obviously a very blanket statement with a lot of layers to it for a guy like Martin Kaut. But at the end of the day, that's what it boils down to for him. We need you to be more like Logan O'Connor. And until you're like that, it's going to be hard for you to stick in this lineup.
And you know, the counterpoint before I get too carried away here is, we've seen a lot of love for Anton Bleed getting opportunities and called up because he's all hard work, that mm-hmm. there is maybe less skill upside.
For sure.
And that's also not enough, though. There yep. is a reason Bleed is back in the AHL as well. Doesn't mean we won't ever see him again. I think he's yeah. kind of an old faithful in Bednar's rotation as far as call-ups go. But yeah. I think there is a balance somewhere in between where Martin Kaut does have a skill upside that yep. appeals to the way Bednar wants him to play. There's just, there is a fine balance that has not been struck yet.
It's Jared Bednar had talked about it so much last year with guys like Andre Burakovsky, and it applies to kind of wrap all this together and we can move on. It applies to what we've talked about so far, both Martin Kaut and now what we're seeing in overtime. Put in the work first and you will find yourself in positions for your skill to take over. That's kind of what the Avs have started to embrace now with this overtime. Take your time, put in the work, and wouldn't you know it, you'll find yourself Mikko Rantanen on the doorstep, you know, standing in the blue paint with the puck on your stick. And, you know, that's what we need to see out of Martin Kaut, taking it back to the beginning. Put in that work, and he will find himself in position to let that skill take over like you're talking about.
Definitely.
Last thing I think we've got for today, we got the Broncos guys filing in here. We just wanted to give a quick update on Bowen Byram. Megan, I just kind of want your opinion on him in general, but Jared Bednar did tell us the day before they left on the road trip, the four-game road trip that went about 10 days, he said, while we're gone, we're expecting Bowen Byram to be skating with Sean Allaire, be on the ice. That did not happen. Bednar said it wasn't a setback, but Bo hasn't made his return to the ice. We've seen him around the facilities working out and stuff. Has this reached is it on your concern radar?
It's mixed. Like, I think the reason I don't want to have much concern is because that will strike panic in the hearts of people listening. And I don't think that it's anywhere close to that, because looking at the timeline of when he told us Byram is expected to take back to the ice, I believe on November 26th, he was last on the ice in a Red Note contact jersey. Mm-hmm. And that was right before they went on this trip. So that was in alignment with when he first said Byram would return to the ice. But then as far as I know, he didn't return again
didn't
after
continue
that.
On the ice,
and
yeah.
So that does sort of look like it contradicts what he said about the timeline, but he's now saying most currently that this isn't any sort of setback. We're seeing him at the rink. I think if anything, this conversation is to try to keep people away from the fear that it's anything related to upper body injury.
I was going to say that they have maintained through all this, it's lower body.
Right.
That's what they are continuing to maintain, which that's the good news. That's like only good news when you're talking about Bowen Byram.
Because people have this fear that the timelines were given for players to return have been very wrong this season, and some have been wrong, but some have been correct too. Like yeah. Gerard's timeline from return was perfect.
Erod is right in line so far.
So the setbacks with like kind of Nichushkin, definitely Darren Helm, are real, and I get why people have some distrust then in the information that they're given, but it's because they've been right about other things too that I can't really point to one way or the other to like, oh, we should be concerned. Like, we're seeing Byram at the rink. We're told it is absolutely lower body. I think all we can deal with is what we do know for right now.
Well, and also with Helm and Landeskog, while those timelines ended up being way wrong, they both required second surgeries. So it's like, yeah, they expected the original timeline to go a certain way, and it just didn't.
Yeah, I think that's the easiest way to sum it up so that hopefully people don't get too carried away with fear, but have an idea that isn't the worst possible conclusion. Well,
yeah.
I guess it's time to wrap it up. Thank you so much for joining us in our real first installment of DNVR's At the Rink. I'm Megan Angley.
Jesse Montano.
We'll catch you next Monday for our next installment.
You know, if you haven't checked out What Chaos yet, you oughta, because we've had all your favorite players on the show. I'm talking Seth Jones, Linus Solmark, Connor Bedard, whoever it may be.
We're live every day on YouTube at noon Eastern, but also available on all podcast platforms, including the one you're listening to right now.
We got guests, and yeah, we're also doing a bit of chit-chat, goofing around, laughing at what makes us laugh in hockey.
So regardless of how deep you are into your hockey fandom, come listen to What Chaos. We'll talk about your favorite team, we'll talk about your least favorite team, and everybody in between. And we're having a ton of fun doing it every single day, Monday through Thursday. It's What Chaos, presented by All City Network.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com. We make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.